I think it's safe to assume that the person on the other end of that sales email that you're about to send, that potential client that's about to open up an email from you, is absolutely inundated with other sales emails. And when you're inundated with other sales emails and even a ton of emails in general, I mean, is it possible that all these like sales reps that are trying to do business with them sound exactly the same? Is it possible that they're, I don't know, scanning those emails? And many of us might even be failing the test of the scan. So today I thought it might be really timely to talk about a little something, something I like to call five ways to send an email that sets you apart. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, I have a really cool free resource that I want to make sure that you take full advantage of. If you're like me, you love the word free. Well, this is a free app, and not only is the app free, but all the little goodies that I have for you once you download the app are absolutely free. And it's the Sales Playbook app. And on this app, I have over 300 free audio sales lessons. Seriously, I've been archiving them for over 7 years. And if you want to be able to like binge listen to each and every one of them, all you have to do is visit yoursalesplaybook.com/app. yoursalesplaybook.com/app. Do it from your smartphone, and you just there's a link where you're going to click on the link from your smartphone, save it to your home screen, and man, you are done. And the really cool thing about this is that not only do I have 300 of these like free sales lessons for you, but I like continue to add more at a rate of about 2 to 3 each and every month. And it's a great way for you to make sure that you don't miss any of these episodes. So especially if you've been finding value in these podcasts, you'll never miss a beat. So having said that, you know how I like to roll. I don't really like to dick around talking about, well, we're going to be talking about this. You notice I don't have a co-host. I'm not sitting here with a lot of cute bantering back and forth for 20 minutes. It's kind of like the New Yorker in me. I like to just like get down to business. So having said that, I have five different things that you should be doing to send an email that sets you apart, because that's really the name of the game. I mean, email is just such a noisy channel, but it's such a necessary channel. I want to show you a few ways, and there's just tons of things that you could be doing, but I want to show you at least five today that you could, and they're really actionable tips. So it's not like theoretical things that we could sit here, have a highbrow conversation about all kinds of useless shit. No, I'm talking about stuff like you could like leave the podcast and get right to work, roll up your sleeves and try them. So having said that, it brings us to item number one on this list of five things, right? Feel free to say duh after this, but if you're not doing what you're about to like say duh or accuse it of being sales 101, my advice to you is to shut your face, man. Take your medicine and like, I don't know, do it, because it's like the worst way to say, yeah, that's sales 101. And are you doing it? No. Okay. Well, maybe you should shut up. So the first thing is to send a better email. You ready for the duh moment? Put on my Captain Obvious cape. You really should embrace some degree of research. Now, my way of sending sales emails is not to teach you how to send out like bulk, like email blasts, like, you know, like 3,000 of these at a time. There is a way to do that. That's not what we're talking about today. I'm talking about like to Jane Jones at the ABC company. So you need to treat that email like you would picking up the phone. At least I hope you would do this if you were to pick up the phone and call Jane Jones, or even John Jones for that matter, her brother, right? And he might be cooler. I don't know. I don't care. But like do a little bit of research. Now, here's where a lot of people get confused. They go to the extreme ends of research. You have those who just don't do it, right? So that's one extreme end. It's like, no, man, I could send out more emails. I could make more phone calls if I don't research. I mean, come on, man, it's a numbers game. And then there are those who make, like, research into, like, a full-time research analyst position. And in those cases, I would really invite you to look at your motives. What you might be embracing there on that extreme is an avoidance activity that you'd rather do something safe like researching stuff all day long than putting yourself out there and running the risk of somebody saying, remove me from your list, right? Like where they get like all kinds of pissy with you. So what I'd like to propose, and I really wish it was my idea, but this gentleman by the name of Steve Richard, who preaches something called the 3x3 rule when it comes to research. And the 3x3 rule is very, very simple. You set the timer on your smartphone, or anything for that matter. If you're still like you still find yourself with like an egg timer from like 1972, that'll suffice. I mean, you're going to get ridiculed, but it will suffice. You set it for 3 minutes. And in 3 minutes, what you do is you research for 3 minutes with the objective, which now brings us to the second three. The first three was the 3 minutes. The second three is the objective of finding three things within those 3 minutes. Now, you might be thinking, well, how the heck can I really find anything I can use in 3 minutes? Number one, you'd be surprised, especially if you're building this muscle group. You also have to know what to look for, which I'm about to teach you for free, by the way. And also, too, you have to understand that unless you're like truly God's gift to sales, like you are that like that rock star we always talk about, you're not going to slam dunk a home run the first time. What's going to happen is you're going to have multiple times that you're reaching out to them, whether it be by phone or by email or by LinkedIn or whatever it is. And what you can do now each and every time is now try to get another piece of that puzzle, solve another part of the mystery, 3 minutes at a time. There's an old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And in this case, it's going to be 3 minutes at a time. So here's what you should be looking for when you're researching, because we all know that we're supposed to research, but a lot of people don't know what to look for. There's all kinds of things that you could be looking for, but I'm going to give you two right now that I think, again, the whole purpose today, give you some actionable things that you could shut this off, get to work, and say, oh my gosh, that was the best time I've ever spent on a podcast. So the first thing is you want to look for trigger events. Now, trigger events go by a few different names. Some people call them triggers. Again, we call them trigger events. Some people call them compelling events. And all it is, and there's all different definitions for this, so here's my just straight up definition of it. I mean, you're not going to find this in any marketing books or sales books, but my definition, my crazy definition is as follows. It would be comprised of things that are going on in your potential client's world, even your client's world, by the way, your potential client's world or your client's world that would dramatically increase the probability of them needing your product or service. So again, it's something that's going on in your potential client's world or your client's world that would dramatically increase the probability of them needing your product or service. So let me give you a rather grim example of this, because sometimes I think the best way for us to grasp something is to go off the subject, think of something unrelated, right? So this way we don't have any like rules or preconceived notions. So what I want you to imagine right now is a rather unfortunate set of circumstances where you have cut yourself and you are bleeding really, really bad. Now, I happen to sell tourniquets. At that moment in time, do you think there would be a high probability that you would need that tourniquet? I'm thinking yes. And also, I'd have to give you a gold star for listening to my damn podcast when you're bleeding to death. I mean, that is dedication. You are the fan of the year. But I'm thinking there would be a higher probability that you would need that, as opposed to me cold calling people without any knowledge or research and saying, hey, by the way, I sell these really cool tourniquets. You happen to be bleeding today? Do you need one? Big difference there. Now, you might laugh and you might think that's a silly example, but right there is the difference between having a trigger and not having a trigger. So in sales, right, there's all kinds of triggers. In fact, I'm not going to go into each and every one of them right now, but I will tell you that there are over 30 different triggers that I teach in all of my webinars, by the way. And we have a webinar that's going to be coming up on the 23rd called How to Write an Awesome Sales Email. And during that, I'm going to share all 30 of them. And I'll give you the links and stuff later on. But for now, let me give you a few to give you, like, to get you thinking. So in sales, it could be, as far as triggers, it could be a brand new decision maker in a company, right? It could be a situation where you have this new person that started with the company. And you know how new people are. They kind of have that new car smell, right? They're looking, they have all this piss and vinegar. They want to conquer the world. Many of them are given powers in the beginning that might be removed from them a little bit later. So you have like new people. That could be a huge trigger. It could be companies that are hiring. Companies that are hiring for a reason. It could be expansion. It could be turnover. How about things like product launches or company relocation or company expansion? Earnings, both good and bad. Many times we think, well, only go after the companies that are kicking ass. Well, that could be a good thing. They have money. But how about companies that are not kicking ass, that are getting their ass kicked? Well, I mean, think about when people have a higher probability of change, when things are all nice and comfy or when they're getting their ass kicked. So that could be something. We're living in a world now where there are lots and lots of online reviews of things. And if you're like me, you check those reviews. So things like TripAdvisor reviews, things like Yelp. How about Glassdoor? If their employees are saying this company sucks and they're getting all kinds of bad PR, that could get in the way of their growth. Another huge trigger that you want to think about are things that are going on with their competitors. Because one of the things that I found is that the higher up you go in an organization, the higher up, like that C-level, the more competitive these people become. So they're very much into keeping up with the Joneses. They also have this like, you know, like FOMO thing going on, fear of missing out. They don't want to be the one on the outside looking in. Everyone else is in the know. So those are just a few triggers. And those are just a few of the things that you want to look for that could lead to a higher probability. And like I said, I have a ton more that I'm going to be sharing during the webinar on the 23rd. But the other thing that you want to look for, and this next thing can be also a trigger, but you want to look for something that could be an icebreaker. And it could be if that company blogs and they were blogging about a particular topic, and maybe that just happens to be an awesome segue into what you do and how it might help them. So an icebreaker like that, if you're on LinkedIn or whatever, and somebody shares something, it could be something like they're traveling. It could be something like, yeah, we're really proud of this new product that's going to be coming out. See, there goes that trigger that I mentioned before. It could be even, believe it or not, an icebreaker. If you're connected with someone on LinkedIn, you'll learn of their work anniversaries or when they started a new job or their birthday. Now, those things can be icebreakers, and it's a hell of a lot better than going in cold. So that's step number one. Take your research more seriously, and you know, don't just like blindly send out these emails. So if you take the time to research them and use that 3x3 rule we were talking about, you're not going to spend a gazillion hours being a research analyst, nor are you going to just like haphazardly send emails. But now what's going to happen is this leads nicely into the second tip. You really need to do the first thing for the second thing to really happen. So the second thing, you ready for this? Lead with them and not you. Let me say this again, and I'm going to explain. I'm going to do some splaining here. Lead with them and not you. So what I mean by that, starting with the subject line, many people will put out a subject line that really is all about me as the sender of that email. So a lot of times when I talk to sales reps and I'll say, well, tell me about some of the subject lines that you use. And one of the popular ones, which I'm not a fan of, by the way, is just like simply putting the name of their company, the sender's company. So in my case, the name of my company is Castain Training Systems. And so imagine now you get an email from me and the subject line is Castain Training Systems. Now, forgive me, and earmuffs, kids, if bad language offends you, but like, what do you give a shit about like Castain Training Systems in the first, especially in the first few seconds? How is that your favorite subject? Or we'll see things like something else, like about the sender, like Castain Training Systems new webinar, or, you know, our how to write awesome email sales emails webinar. I mean, what do you really care about that at that point? Now, does it work? Yeah, it works. But it works on such a lower level that to me, there are better things that you could be doing. And instead, you want to make it about them. So what if you take that research that you've done and you notice, for example, that they have an upcoming product launch and there are things that you can do that can help them with that? So, I mean, what if like you, right there in the subject line, you put something like your X1000 product launch in May? See, that's their favorite subject. You're not their favorite subject. I mean, haven't we heard that one? What's everybody's favorite subject? I'll give you a hint. It's not you. It's themselves. So if it all starts at the subject line, we really need to start making it about them. Now, the beautiful thing about triggers, by the way, is the more like intense the trigger is, and it's not some like minor type of trigger, but the more intense the trigger, the more significant the trigger, the more they're talking about it in their organization, the more top of mind it is. So if you go and reference that in the subject line, you are really talking about something that is just a hot topic for them, and it's going to get opened at a much higher rate. So it really begins with compelling them enough in the subject line that they open up your email and they hear you out. I mean, don't we all feel that we have a better chance once somebody at least hears us out? So that's the first thing. You're going to make it about them, but there's another opportunity to make it about them and not you. And this one is where a lot more people start hanging their head and going guilty, right? The subject line, I bet a lot of you were listening to that and saying, yeah, but no, I don't really make it about me in the subject line as much. But this next part, just about everybody. And when I say just about everybody, seriously, like 99.9% of your competitors are doing what I'm about to say. So you start, they click on the email, right? They open it up and there's the greeting. And in the very first paragraph, really the very first sentence to be more specific, they're basically introducing themselves and they're saying something along the lines that Castain Training Systems is a full service training company or something like that. Castain Training Systems offers a comprehensive suite of training solutions or, you know, similar flavor. We're a full service this. We're a one source that. We offer a comprehensive suite. Well, there's a few things that are wrong with that, aside from sending a me too email. The very first thing that's wrong with that is that you're leading with something that they don't give a shit about. You're leading with you. Instead, you reverse it. And what you should be doing is leading with them. So if you've started leading with them in the subject line, I say you finish what you started in the subject line in your greeting. And you might want to say something like, I noticed that your upcoming product launch is going to be centered around blah, blah, and blah. Or it could be, I noticed that you're going to be relocating to the Northeast. Do you see? Like right away, it cuts to the chase and it leads with something that they're interested in, and it's them. Also, you've done something here that's kind of brilliant. And what it is that you've captured their attention effectively within seconds. Right? I mean, we all have these limited attention spans. So you've really captured their attention early. And then what you're going to do is, by all means, you should tie it in with what you're doing. So feel free to talk about that kind of stuff. But you're going to lead with them. Okay? So now the other thing that you're going to do. This brings us to item number three. This one might be the most important thing that I'm going to tell you. You need to understand something. Because the average person receiving your email receives so many emails each and every day, because they are involved in sending and receiving so many emails a day, and because they have so much noise going on in their world, I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, is it possible that they're going to scan that email? Even if you've caught their attention in the subject line, they're going to scan the email. So what we want to do, you ready for this? You might want to pull the car over and jot this one down. You want to put speed bumps into your email. You want to put speed bumps into your email. Speed bumps are things that we put in there to slow people the hell down, to make them stop, even jam on their brakes. And it would be things like, you could put like a headline in there, and or just putting a word in bold. One of the things that I do in my call to actions in my emails is I'll put the word click in lowercase, the word here in all caps, and I'll put it in bold. You want something that the eye, or two if they're blessed with two eyes, says, oh wow, what's going on here? Let me stop. It's just like, it's just almost subconsciously. It's like, whoa, what is this right here? Right? That's not normal. Kind of an anomaly going on here. What the F is going on? So that's what you want to do. You want to put these little speed bumps in there. The other little speed bump that you could be doing, I highly recommend, and I'm not the first one to say this, you've known this your whole life, is a PS. And you want the PS to really stand out. I would use a different font. I would use a different size. I would use a different color for the PS. I would maybe, you know, italicize it. And what you can do in the PS is just like put just something in there to grab their attention. See, that's a form of a speed bump. So, and also too, I would really recommend that you put your emails on the more briefer side. And in fact, this week, if you want to go check it out on yoursalesplaybook.com, in fact, those of you listening and it's like, you know, some point in the future, whatever, right now it is March 12th, 2017. So if you go back on my blog, they're all dated around, I'm going to guess that it was probably around the 9th or the 10th that I did this email, blog post. There is a tactic that a lot of people are using, and it was originally preached by Daniel Pink. Even Guy Kawasaki, I think, was preaching this as well. And it's like a briefer email, 3 to 5 sentences. The blog post that I did was talking about a 3-sentence email, and I don't think you should do every email like that, but I think it's a great way to change it up. But I was digressing. What you want to do in general is make sure that it's on the briefer side, because if you're in scanning mode and you get all these emails and you've got to very, very quickly make an assessment as to whether or not this is worth your time, if you see something that reads like War and Peace, I think that the tendency is to say, well, I don't have time for this now. I'll like check it out later. And then you conveniently forget to check it out later. Why? Because, I don't know, maybe like 100 or 200 more emails have like cross your path since then. So I would think about that as well. So the third thing is to use those speed bumps. It would be headlines. It would be putting things in bold, lowercase, uppercase, doing that PS. You could use different colors, things like that. That could be very, very helpful. Brings us to tip number four. And I think this is incredibly important. You want to look at the overall vibe that you are putting out there through your email. And you really want to avoid any kind of like jargony marketing speak. Let me say that again, jargony types of marketing speak. And you could even call it sales speak if you want. Many times, and the illustration, like the example I gave you before, when I said how most sales emails start, where it's like, we are a full service this. Well, first of all, I mean, I just really have to say this. What in the hell does full service mean? Could somebody please help me out with that? Because it's one of those things in sales we say all the time. I don't think people – I don't know what that means. I mean, what do you mean by that? Like, and what kind of a visual are you trying to paint? See, I've heard it so many times that it just doesn't mean anything to me. It is just wasted reading time for me to have to consume that kind of shit in an email. So – you know, full service and comprehensive and end-to-end and one source. And even there are like these phrases in every industry that are beaten to death. And let me give you an example of one of them. I was in the franchising industry. It was – I left there almost 20 years ago. It was like about 18 years ago that I left. And there was a phrase back then that I thought was tired, and it's still being used. And it's something like this, you know, only one of our franchises is like being in business for yourself, but not by yourself. And every time people spew this kind of shit, they almost have this cute look on their face like, I'm the first one to say, no, you're not. You're like about the 600 millionth person to say that. And congratulate yourself. You just gave me a Me Too sales message. So if you want to stand apart from your competitors, stop saying the same shit they're saying. You've got to say things differently. You've got to like think about packaging your message differently. But most importantly, if that doesn't appeal to you, let me just break it down to a simple thing. You want to have your email. You want to have that voicemail even. You want to have that phone script, if you will. You want to have your presentation when you meet face-to-face with people pass a very simple test, and it's called the kitchen table test. If you would not say it to someone sitting at the kitchen table, having a cup of coffee, having a conversation, don't you dare say it in sales. Because you see, when you start spewing things like it's like being in business for yourself, but not by yourself. And we offer end-to-end comprehensive one source. We're a full service. And on and on and on. I'm here to tell you, you ready for this big revelation? People, they don't talk that way. They don't. So you want to have a visit with people. And if you continue to have a visit and a chat with people and a conversation and a dialogue, you are really having a courtship with people. And that's what this is all about. Instead of something that you're talking at them and speaking in some kind of foreign language, like without the subtitles. So you really want to think about it. That's the kitchen table test. And that is tip number four. It brings us to tip number five. And then we're going to wrap up. Tip number five is that when it comes time for you to talk about you and your company, remember, we're leading with them. They are their own favorite subject, not you at that point. We start with them. We get their interest with them, and then we give them kind of like, well, a by the way. We're not going to say it that way, but kind of like, you know, by the way, you know, I help companies with that, like you would do in a conversation. And what we're going to do now is we want to use evidence. We want to use evidence, right? I've been talking a lot about that lately. Evidence, really the best way for you to think about evidence, it's things that you can do to reduce doubt and skepticism and people just really questioning whether or not you are worth their time. See, at this point, when we're not really in front of them yet, that's what evidence is all about. It's kind of to reduce the probability of somebody pushing back, to reduce and or eliminate doubt, skepticism, or just that overall, I don't know if this is really worth my time. So there are lots of things that you can do to provide evidence. In fact, here we go again. When I do that webinar on March 23rd, we're going to be sharing over 12 different types of evidence. For now, I'm just going to give you a few because I want to give you things that you could immediately roll up your sleeves, get to work, and they're really actionable. So forms of evidence. How about a fact? Could you provide them with a fact about your company, about your widget, about your service department, about your average client experience? How about something like that? Or how about statistics or referencing a report? Things like that. Because see, part of what you should be doing when you're sending your emails is, number one, acknowledging this is a courtship. This is not a one-off type of thing that we're trying to do. This isn't like a quick one-night stand here where we're going to just like prove to them in one night that, you know, this is it forever, right? No, it doesn't really work that way. It has to be a courtship. So one of the things that you need to be doing through repetition and continually showing up in a variety of methods through email and phone calls and LinkedIn and snail mail and, you know, just a variety of things, you need to be demonstrating your expertise as well. And you have to be demonstrating that you know your stuff. So that's another type of evidence that you need to be putting out there, educating them. That could be a really strong form of evidence. And I think perhaps at the top of the list of evidence is a good old-fashioned testimonial. And that, to me, is absolutely huge. Using a testimonial, you can kind of just put it in there as a quote. You could even have the whole email centered around what one of your clients was saying, but you're not really starting with that. Again, you're starting with them, and maybe, you know, with the permission of a client, you're sharing a testimonial where they're talking about a very similar set of circumstances. So that could be very, very helpful. So for now, forms of evidence could be a fact. It could be sharing statistics. It could be sharing testimonials. But there's other forms of evidence, you know? And one of the things I alluded to before was, and I want you to jot this down, demonstrating. Demonstrating is a form of evidence. Now, you can do a demonstration of your product or service, and it can be a little bit awkward through email, but there are ways for you to do it, by the way. But what I'm talking about when I say demonstrating or demonstrate is like to demonstrate your expertise. We have these cute phrases in sales. And probably every podcast now you hear me say, we have these cute phrases in sales, like people do business with people they know, like, and trust. And really, it's up to the sales rep to provide value. I really don't think that the average person knows what any of those things mean. It's like they have consumed the Kool-Aid and they're hypnotized by these phrases. And they are just used and abused to the point that really nobody knows what it means, but they know they're supposed to say it a few thousand times. So I think the same thing kind of happens in sales here, right? Same thing happens in our emails and all. So, you know, one of the phrases that we always hear is that, you know, people buy you first and then they buy the company. See, I agree with that. I really do believe that they buy you first and then they buy the company. And that doesn't mean that, okay, so you have to be the most likable person on the planet. Talk about those pictures that are on their desk and that, you know, that trophy up on the shelf. And you know, in the old days, they used to say, talk about the fish on the wall. I just don't know why today somebody would have a fish on their wall, but whatever, man, if that's what they want to do. The moose head on the wall. I mean, it's an office, not, you know, like the Elk Lodge, right? But anyway, it's, to me, those are all like, okay, they're okay. Everybody's doing them. But if you really want to separate yourself and you really want to offer them the opportunity to buy you first, then do things that really cement the you part, like demonstrating your authority, demonstrating your know-how, demonstrating how like you can help them, educate them on making a better buying decision. So those are some things that you can think about. So there you have it, folks. Five things that will help set you apart. And very, very quick recap. We talked about number one, do some research. Use that 3x3 rule. Look for trigger events and icebreakers. Also, you item number two, you want to lead with them instead of you. So it starts at the subject line. Make it about them. Use that research to get their attention with their favorite subject, which is, of course, them and not you. Also, your opening statement, instead of leading with you and, you know, we're a full service this or a little like, you know, a brief note about Castain Training, a little about us, that kind of thing. Make it about them. Now, The other thing, item number three, you want to use speed bumps. Speed bumps are things that acknowledge, first of all, people are going to scan your emails. So when they scan, we want things that stop them dead in their tracks and go, oh, wow, what is this? And the ways that we can do it with headlines, making things bold, the use of lowercase and right next to it, uppercase and in bold, different colors, the use of a PS. Number four, your emails need to pass the kitchen table test. No marketing speak. Speak like a human being. If you wouldn't, I mean, when you're sitting having a cup of coffee with someone, you're not going to say full service and end-to-end and comprehensive and buy your, you know, for yourself but not by yourself. You would not talk that way. So don't do it in your sales messages. And then last but not least, you want to use evidence. Evidence really is comprised of things that help reduce doubt and skepticism. And it's things like facts and statistics and testimonials. And one other thing about evidence, good evidence really answers the question, who said so besides yourself? There you have it, folks. I mean, you have five ideas there. I believe every one of them is actionable, all worthless until you get out there and you like roll up your sleeves and you do something with them. If you like these tips and if you would like approximately 50 more, I want you to consider joining us on March 23rd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time for our How to Write Awesome Sales Emails webinar. And not only are we going to be sharing over 50 actionable tips with you, I have 10 really cool templates that I'm going to send out to you as a Word doc. The reason why I sent it as a Word doc, I want you to adjust them to fit your personality and your style. So that's one of the things that we're going to be doing. If you'd like to learn more and certainly to reserve your spot, simply visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rock. Your email. Let's say it again. yoursalesplaybook.com/rock your email. I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.